You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Wednesday, July 14th. Today we're going to shift our gaze northwards a little bit. As many of you know, we typically focus on more local stories around southern Vermont, and in particular in Bennington County. But today we're going to sort of travel northwards and focus on the Northeast Kingdom, the three-county area, Orleans, Essex, and Caledonia counties that are at the exact opposite end of the state, or corner of the state, from where we are down here in the Southwestern Banana Belt, as we're sometimes referred to. It's a real pleasure to have today in our virtual studio two distinguished reporters. Justin Trombley works and reports for VT Digger. He covers the Northeast Kingdom for them. And Robin Smith has recently retired from journalism, but had a long and distinguished career writing for the Caledonian Record, one of the premier papers from up in that corner of the world. And she began reporting with them in 2002, and before that, she was the editor at the Bennington Banner, which is where we first crossed paths. And Robin, it seems like only yesterday that we were milling around there in the Banner newsroom.
Very nice to see you, Andrew.
Just to kind of get us started, how do you both see the Northeast Kingdom emerging out of the pandemic? I mean, that's a big question down here as well. I'm sure just about everywhere. And Robin, maybe I'll ask you to get us started here. Do you see any, one of the things that stands out, of course, of the Northeast Kingdom is the vaccination rates in the three counties are among the lowest in the state. I think they're the three lowest, actually. Does that imply anything to you about what might be coming next?
Not really. I think that it reflects the rural nature of the state. The more rural it is, the harder it is to get to a vaccination site. You've got to drive from one end of Essex County to the other, or across county to Newport or some, it's not like living in a larger town or city where it's just, down the road and it's open all day and stuff like that. I mean, there's also some political, it's traditionally more Republican, and all you have to do is look at the national polls to see that, there's some resistance to vaccinations among Republicans because of the past presidential administration. So I think that's the case in general. What do you think, Justin, about that?
Yeah, I think those are both good points. And I think on the first point, there are a lot of significant transportation problems up in that region, especially in the Essex County area. And I mean, if you look at like the Canaan area, for instance, a lot of people up there get a lot of their normal medical services from New Hampshire. They go across the river, but they can't really do that with vaccines because, at least as of a couple months ago, New Hampshire was only vaccinating its own residents. So there are significant challenges up there. And I think the political aspect is definitely a factor as well. I don't know if it's entirely just a partisan thing, or if part of it is sort of this idea that these counties, and particularly Essex County, are more self-reliant. I think people up here like to say, there are definite structural issues as well. These are the oldest counties, or some of the oldest counties in the state. There are challenges among older folks getting around, and particularly in Essex County, where there are so few people and everything is so far spread apart, that can be challenging, particularly in the winter.
What's the economic landscape looking like? My sense of the Northeast Kingdom is that resources like lumber and dairy farming, farming agriculture in general, along with tourism and outdoor recreation opportunities, form a big part of the economy of the region. Is that a fair way to look at it? And I guess if so, do you feel like they're in good shape as we hopefully put the pandemic behind us and move forward into the new normal?
I would say that if you take us back to the Great Recession and you know, the real estate crash, it actually didn't hurt the Northeast Kingdom as much because the economy was sort of depressed to begin with. So, you know, we are already kind of operating on a lower level. You don't have the boom and the bust constantly. Lumber prices are awesome. Some things are just going great guns. Maple syrup production in Essex County. I mean, things are happening. Border, there's a lot of border traffic now as there's more demand for goods coming from Canada. It seems to be moving. But on the flip side, it's hard to fill jobs. You pick up a local paper and, go back a few years and there was hardly any ads for workers. And I'm thinking of my former competition, the Newport paper and my paper, and Justin, you see it, I'm sure. You know, they're running front page ads. Please work for us. We'll give you a bonus. Truck drivers, contractors, all kinds of demand. And if you've got the skills, you can get top dollar these days.
Yeah, I was going to add on to that. You know, one of the trends that you see across the Northeast Kingdom, and it's almost like a miniature of Vermont as a whole, is a lot of young people, young professionals are sort of leaving the area. It's almost like they call it a brain drain of sorts. But with that, you know, you get fewer and fewer people who are able to fill jobs like that and crucial jobs, especially in, you know, the fields of medicine or law. I know I'd written about public defenders a couple of years ago up here and how it's such a struggle to try to attract folks to move to this region and then to stay here because there are these longstanding issues. And I think one of the points that you said, Andrew, about tourism is definitely a huge factor in the economy historically and right now. And I think that's one of the ways where you know, things are uncertain with the border being closed. A lot of the traffic at these outdoor recreation spots, like, you know, Kingdom Trails, for instance, relies on that Canadian visitation. And without that, you know, people are concerned. But I think there's a lot of optimism around that for when the border does reopen.
Do we have a sense or any information on when the border might be reopened? Is that going to be a couple of weeks from now, or are we looking at?
I'll throw in, because I am on the border here. I'm actually living now on the Quebec side of the border, and I haven't been able to easily cross for months now because it's going to be interesting, because Canada is going to demand people be fully vaccinated to come to Canada. And Canadians are going to have to be fully vaccinated to go to the U.S. and come back. So while the U.S. says we're not going to do vaccination passports requirements for things, if you want to cross the border, you're going to need your vaccinations. And it's just, that's going to be a fact up here. But I believe the border will open up next month. It might not be it might be sort of in stages, but all indications are it's going to start happening. It might not be so easy for day trips, though. And that's the tourism, the steady driver. People who want to go to Kingdom Trails, for example, and stay over a weekend or go for a week, they might have an easier time of it. So I'm really hoping the border can open up. It's going to help those kinds. That economy has suffered really badly. J-Peak, half of their customers are from Canada. You know, it's really tough. And I want to see that border open soon, but Canadians watched the U.S. do weird stuff last year. And without getting into the politics of it, they're not going to open it up until things settle down a little bit. So.
Well, interesting, because that even farther down here, you hear echoes of that. The Canadian traffic that comes down to this end of the state is an important piece of the overall action. It's not just New Yorkers and folks in New Jersey and Connecticut. But well, let's move on. I mean, one of the other things I wanted to hear from you both about is the state of broadband, which, of course, in the past year has become such a lively discussion point. We've seen people working remotely and schools relying on broadband to kind of continue education. And my sense is that up in the Northeast Kingdom, you have, I guess no place in Vermont is like what we might call cutting edge, but it seems like in my sense of it is, again, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that some of the broadband capacity up in the Kingdom could stand an upgrade or whatever. In general, is that the case? And is the CUD or Communications Union District that's operating up your way, or is it beginning to move forward and find partners to build the infrastructure that would be needed to bring fiber optic to the last mile locations?
Yeah, on your first point, the Kingdom is historically and still is, I think, the worst served area in the state for broadband. The number of households that don't have access to high speed internet is a greater percentage than everywhere else in the state. And you see that as a factor in a lot of the things that happen here. A lot of the trends of people leaving or young people not staying around. That type of infrastructure definitely plays a role. On the flip side, what you also see is these CUDs popping up, and they've been popping up across the state, especially in the last year or so, and one of them in the Kingdom. And from the start, they've been saying that, you know, there aren't going to be instant results with this, and they want to temper expectations that, you know, people aren't going to get broadband internet, you know, instantly. And it's not going to be everywhere instantly, but they are starting to make some of those foundational moves that would allow that to happen. I know one of the most recent things or one of the things they were focusing on was they wanted to bring in some areas like Newport, for instance, that are relatively well served in the internet department compared to other places in the Kingdom, but those are bases that would allow them to collect more revenue and then use that to then, you know, expand to less reachable regions of the NEK. So I do think they're on the right path. At least they appear to be, and I know there's a lot of public support for them. The CUD has also just got a huge amount of money from the legislature recently. So I'll be curious to see where those funds go and how they're used and what kind of partners in the private sector that the CD here and the ones elsewhere will partner with.
One of the CUDs anyways is looking at, you know, bringing in one of the private sector partners to actually do the work, and they would just run the system. But, you know, it seems like that's such a big part. You mentioned earlier, Justin, the population situation where younger folks might not be inclined to, you know, stay around. But I would think that broadband would be one of those tools that would, you know, encourage younger folks to stay in the area and build businesses or pursue careers there.
Yeah, 100%. And it wouldn't just be a tool for that, but, you know, it's also just a kind of a crucial tool in everyday business and life in a way these days. I think one of the things that people saw throughout the pandemic, at least the height of the pandemic, was that we really do rely on the internet and having easy access to reliable internet connection. There are a lot of students up here who, when classes went remote, struggled with that, not just students, but teachers as well. I mean, you had people who would park, you know, they park their cars in a parking lot outside a school or a library or something where there's free Wi-Fi, so that they're able to finish their work, do their homework, whatever. So I think that's one of the lessons that the kingdom, and I mean, I think everybody took out of the pandemic, was that, you know, this is a pretty crucial infrastructure piece for Vermont right now. And I think that's reflected in the legislative priorities that we've seen over the past couple months.
Right. What is your sense of both of you on the real estate market up there? I mean, down here, boy, last year it's just been smoking hot. You know, properties get listed, and you know, it's just a matter of days before they're snapped up by somebody, often sight unseen. You know, bidding wars, all of that. Is that you know, when you think back a couple of years, it's like, huh? But is the real estate market as warm up your way as it is down here?
Well, I want to jump in on that one, and then I'll hand it to Justin for more updated information. But I sold my house put it on the market in May when they first were allowed to show houses, you know, when the governor shut everything down. My house was one of the first to be shown in the area. And I mean, I was on the market for 6 weeks, four buyers and one sale. You know, it went very fast for a small house in the village, though, of Derby Line. And because great internet service there through cable, those broadband issues weren't there. People are buying sight unseen. They were anyway, because I have friends of mine, you know, they talk about looking at a house in the afternoon and calling the real estate agent back that evening, and it had already been bought up by somebody who just looked at it on the internet. I mean, because you can look at a 3D view of a house and you know where it is, and you know, you can go on Google and look at the neighborhood. I mean, it's crazy, but true. And people just wanted the place to get out of the city. I don't know what, is that still happening, Justin?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it's happening at the same rate, but it definitely still is what I'm hearing from, and then these are, you know, anecdotal conversations with folks, but what I'm hearing from people who are in the real estate market is that, yeah, there are a lot of people who are coming in from out of state, particularly from, you know, like New York City and such. They're buying properties sight unseen. They're buying them for way more than they would otherwise. And like you said, Andrew, bidding wars are happening. And that is still continuing. And I know it's not just the house market itself, but also the apartment landscape is also really cinching up. I know I've been in touch with folks recently who are struggling to find rentals in the area as well. And I know that's even worse in places like Chittenden County. So you can only imagine. But yeah, it is still going on, and it's definitely an interesting trend that I would keep an eye on. And I wonder, you know, if that's going to develop into some sort of bubble, what might happen when that kind of tails off. So.
Yeah, well, it's really been fascinating. I guess for me, I've been kind of wondering, will this go on and continue, you know, in coming years, or is this the start of a long-term trend, or is it kind of more of a thing like what we saw post 9/11, where there was a surge of buying for a year or so after that event, and then that sort of tailed off again for a while. But well, I guess we'll find out. I just wanted to, in the time we have left, to kind of have you guys talk about a couple of the recent stories you've been following or writing. And Justin, you had a really interesting story, I thought, last week in Digger about the Kingdom Wind Turbine project that, of course, is very controversial for a long period of time. Green Mountain Power put up, I think it's 21 wind turbines across a range of mountains there outside of Lowell. A lot of pushback from some folks, but they're up there now and spinning away. I drove by them the other day, and it's quite a sight. You had a story about, you know, some issue around some of the regulations about that. I wonder if you could explain that for us.
So in the past few months, Green Mountain Power was basically seeking a permit renewal for stormwater drainage and how they handle that on Lowell Mountain. And they have 31, they're called level spreaders. It's a type of device where the idea is to take incoming drainage stormwater and kind of spread it out evenly, so that it's more like a flat sheet rather than a concentrated, you know, stream of water. So they brought this to the state, and you know, conservationists who had long opposed this project, and there's a pretty colorful history there, came out once again and said, you know, this is an opportunity for us to try to get some movement in seeking some controls here that we've wanted. You know, one of the big issues that they've brought up is that they would like more independent monitoring of the level spreaders and of just the wind farm in general. You know, one point that came up in a recent hearing was that part of the permit renewal was that the state would basically agree to say, hey, this experimental level spreader idea that you guys have going on, that's working and it's a good model. The reason they've been able to say that is because they had Green Mountain Power do a study, and the study only looked at three of the 31 level spreaders, and that was a big sticking point for some of these activists, was that you know, you only looked at three of the 31, and not only was it this small percentage, but these are experts that were picked by Green Mountain Power. So they're looking to see if the state or the company will agree to have some independent monitoring in the case. You know, they're trying to find some wiggle room in the permit process. Of course, the draft permit has been approved by the state. So right now there's just sort of a limbo for when the state will approve that final permit, and in the meantime, the controversy is still going. It's been over a decade, and it's probably not letting up anytime soon.
Really? Yeah. But I guess that doesn't sound like it's anything that could shut the entire thing down. I mean, it's just something they'll work through. But yeah. It's not like the wind turbines will stop spinning because of that. Which, I guess, Robin, what's your sense of all that? I mean, you must have covered or followed the whole story with the Kingdom Wind project there from your days at the Caledonian Record. Was it really unpopular up in the Northeast Kingdom when it was being proposed, or did people see this as, you know, hey, you know, job opportunities or something like that?
I think the if you lived in the town of Lowell and another wind project in the Sheffield area, they were looking at a big windfall in like a ski town. You know, you get lots and lots of tax dollars. As soon as you moved away from that town, people in the outlying towns got a very small benefit, a small in the $10,000 range annually. Most of the opponents lived outside of Lowell, for example. Over time, people have either, I think, have gotten used to them, unless they live right next to them, and the ones who are right next to it, either, you know, a lot of them sold their properties to get away from it because it bothered them. I can think of a few people that I knew right from the beginning. And the intensity of the opposition, though, really crystallized a sense in the kingdom that we don't need big footprint projects because we're not a big footprint region here. You know, there's little hills, and having a wind turbine just looks like having a skyscraper or the Bennington Battle Monument in the middle of nowhere. It stands out like a sore thumb, and it's odd. And it really kind of, the Lowell Wind Project almost put the end to any future big wind projects up here. And also because the grid is incapable of handling it, it almost put an end to all the small solar, like medium-sized solar, 500 kilowatt solar projects, because the grid couldn't handle it. They're working that out now to offset that, but you know, we just, you got to have the infrastructure to support big electricity generators in the same way that broadband is essential, but it's all very well to have it in some areas and not in others.
Yeah. I was surprised while I was driving around there over the weekend how many little solar arrays there were in a lot of places. I kind of was thinking, wow, these guys are really on the cutting edge of this stuff. We just have about a minute or so left, and Justin, I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about one of your recent stories that I think you had published earlier this week on the Orleans County director of the Department of Children and Families. Looks like he got reinstated in that position after going through some problems.
Yeah, so the head of the Newport area office for DCF, Patrick Bryan is his name. He was fired last year amid this investigation by the state in which employees accused him of creating this sort of bullying, hostile work environment atmosphere, in addition to claims that he was having inappropriate text exchanges with a subordinate. So the state ultimately fired him. He appealed that decision, and this was, I think, last June, or when it first happened. He appealed this to the Labor Relations Board, and a couple months ago in April, the board ultimately sided with him and said the state did not have just cause in moving to that firing. They skipped the steps of, you know, progressive discipline, where you know, there's a fair expectation that if a certain behavior continues or isn't addressed, then you might be dismissed. And they also sort of rebuffed some of the other claims that the state had made, while still saying they, you know, they didn't condone the behavior that they could prove, and they thought, you know, the text messages were inappropriate. And what they ultimately did is reduce that dismissal to a 15-day suspension, and ordered that he would need back pay as well. The state is now appealing that decision, and so that whole case is going to the Supreme Court at the state level. And there's no timeline yet on when that might progress, but I do know that I think it's next Thursday, the state has a deadline to file their first briefing in the case. So right now, Mr. Ryan is reinstated up there in the Newport office, and the state isn't too happy about that. So,
all right. Well, we'll have to leave it there for now. So I guess it sounds like a to-be-continued kind of story there. Again, wanted to thank both of you for making the time for this conversation today. Really appreciate it. Want to thank you both, Justin Trombley of the VT Digger, and Robin Smith, ex of Caledonian Record, and now enjoying retirement, well-deserved, for sure. And I want to thank all of you as well for being with us today. I hope you've enjoyed our program and discussion, and we'll see you again the next time we're back here. Well, have a great day, everyone, and we'll see you the next time.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.